Imagine you're watching your trading accounts, and it's just completely draining to almost zero during this brutal market sell-off.
Oh, the absolute worst nightmare.
Right, total panic. So you scramble, you wire $3,000 to your broker to try and save your positions.
Hoping it's enough.
Yeah, and the cash clears, you finally take a breath. And then, literally without any warning, your broker liquidates every single asset you own anyway.
Ouch. Yeah.
No phone call, no grace period, just immediate ruthless execution.
Welcome to the incredibly unforgiving world of futures margin.
Exactly. But hey, before we get into why that happens and more importantly, how you can avoid it, a quick heads up. This episode is brought to you by CertFuel. They've got a full Series 3 course with adaptive study quizzes, smart flashcards, and like unlimited practice exams that are weighted just like the real thing. Check it out at certfuel.com.
It's a great resource.
It really is. All right, let's jump into the deep dive.
So that scenario you just described, I mean, that's exactly what we are dissecting today. And I'd argue it is the most critical concept for anyone prepping for the Series 3 exam.
Oh, I would honestly go a step further. It is the absolute non-negotiable core of the exam.
Yeah, it's definitely.
Like, if you are looking at the syllabus, futures margin concepts account for roughly 71% of the test across chapters 1 through 7.
That's a massive chunk.
It's huge.
Okay.
So let me just be incredibly blunt right off the bat here. If you mess up margin, you fail the test.
It's true. I mean, the hurdle rate on those sections is just, it's totally unforgiving. But you know what's funny?
Yeah.
What makes it so challenging isn't actually the math.
No.
No, the math is actually quite basic. The difficulty really comes from this, like, massive fundamental misconception that candidates bring with them from the outside world.
All right, the stock market brain.
Exactly. Almost every calculation question, every conceptual trap, every confusingly worded scenario on the exam, it all preys on the fact that people treat futures margin like a stock market loan.
Yeah, and that is a fatal error. So before we do anything else, I need you, yes, you listening to this right now, to do a little mental exercise with
A
us.
full reset.
Right. Picture the word margin in your head. Think about your standard brokerage account. You know, think about buying Apple stock on margin. Got it.
Hold that thought.
Now, take all of those rules, mentally douse them in gasoline, strike a match, and sweep the ashes right into the trash.
Just burn it down.
Burn it to the ground. Blank slate. Today, we are building futures margin back from scratch.
We have to.
We're going to figure out the why and the how behind the mechanics.
Yeah.
And honestly, to make sure you don't just completely zone out on dry textbook definitions, we're going to use a recurring cast of fictional characters.
I love this. It's the best way to do it. The mechanics of the clearinghouse, they only really make sense when you see how they physically impact different types of actual market participants.
Exactly. So, listener, let's meet our cast who will be suffering for our education today.
Let's do it.
First up, we have speculator Steve. Steve is, well, he's our wild naked directional bettor.
High risk.
Oh, maximum risk. He trades crude oil from this neon lit gaming chair in his basement, chugging energy drinks, and he genuinely believes he can just predict geopolitical events.
Right, a classic retail participant who thinks he's outsmarting the market. And let me tell you, the clearinghouse views Steve with extreme suspicion.
As they should.
Oh.
Okay, next we have Farmer Fiona. Now, Fiona is our calm, methodical, bona fide hedger.
The total opposite of Steve.
Completely. She does not care about getting rich in the futures market. She oversees a massive, multi-generational farm with thousands of acres of real, physical corn.
She's dealing with the real world.
Exactly. She uses the markets purely to protect her real-world livelihood from price collapses.
And Fiona is the backbone of the commercial futures market. The clearinghouse actually really likes Fiona.
We all like Fiona.
Oh. Ah,
All right, then we have spreader Sam. Sam's the guy who plays the gap.
the arbitrager.
Right. He doesn't care if the whole global economy booms or busts. He just places these highly calculated bets on the tiny distance between two related things. He trades the relationship.
Yeah, Sam is doing complex relative value trades. Again, a very different risk profile than our guy Steve in the basement.
Very different. And finally, the boss,
The
Broker Bob.
enforcer.
Broker Bob represents the clearinghouse and the futures commission merchant. Bob is ruthless. He is the unyielding enforcer of the rules. He does not care about your feelings. He grants zero extensions, and he literally shakes everyone down for cash every single afternoon.
And thank God for Broker Bob. I mean, he's the reason the financial system doesn't just collapse overnight.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Without his daily interventions, the counterparty risk in the derivatives market would trigger, like, cascading systemic failures.
Okay, so let's figure out what Broker Bob is actually doing. We can't dive into the math of maintenance or variation margin until we define what this money, this cash, actually represents.
We need to define the core identity.
Right. Because the industry actually tries to avoid the word margin when they can.
Right. They do. In the professional literature, and honestly, often on the exam itself, you're going to see it referred to as a performance bond.
Performance bond.
Yes. They use that specific terminology to signal to traders that this is a good faith security deposit. It's not a partial payment for an asset.
Because there is no asset yet.
Exactly. You have to remember the fundamental nature of a futures contract. When you enter one, nobody actually owns anything.
Right. Like if speculator Steve logs on, sits in his gaming chair, and hits buy on a crude oil futures contract, there are no actual physical barrels of oil sitting in his basement.
Thankfully, no.
He hasn't purchased a physical thing.
Right. A futures contract is not an asset. It is a legally binding promise to do something later.
A promise.
Yes, an obligation to either buy or sell a specific quantity of a commodity at a specific price on a specific date in the future. So, because no physical asset or stock certificate is changing hands today, the money Steve puts down it logically cannot be a down payment.
Because there's no purchase price being financed.
Precisely. The cash he deposits is strictly proof that he won't flake out on his promise 6 months from now. It guarantees his future performance.
Okay, I like to think about this using a real estate analogy.
Oh, I like those. Lay it on me.
Think about renting an apartment versus buying a house. Buying a house on margin, which is the equivalent of buying stock on margin, is a down payment scenario.
Right.
You want a $500,000 house. You put down $100,000, which is your 20%. The bank literally lends you the remaining $400,000.
And you take ownership of the house.
You take ownership. You owe the bank the principal, and you pay them interest every month for the privilege of borrowing their money.
Yeah, that's a perfect description of traditional securities margin governed by Regulation T.
The futures margin is like renting an apartment.
Right, no ownership.
When you sign a 12-month lease, the landlord makes you hand over a security deposit, like first and last month's rent. The landlord is not lending you the monetary value of the apartment building.
No, of course not.
They are just holding your cash in a lockbox to make sure you don't, punch holes in the drywall or trash the carpets or skip town in the middle of the night before the lease is up.
You aren't borrowing anything from the landlord.
Exactly. And you certainly aren't paying the landlord interest on your own security deposit.
That analogy is brilliant. It highlights the exact functional difference. And it actually brings up a scenario that frequently trips up test takers when we look at who is actually on the hook for this deposit.
Oh, right. Okay, listener, I'm going to pause you right here. Direct question for you.
Listen closely to this one.
Think about the apartment lease. Think about the promise. If speculator Steve buys a futures contract to open a long position, and farmer Fiona sells that exact same futures contract to open a short position, who has to put down the security deposit?
Give yourself a beat.
Think about who has obligations. Do you know?
The answer is both of them.
Both.
Both Steve, the long buyer, and Fiona, the short seller, must post the performance bond.
Wait, I want to push back on this because if I'm brand new to this, it sounds crazy. If I am selling something to someone in the normal world, I am the one receiving money.
Usually, yes.
Why on earth am I being forced to put up my own cash as collateral just to sell something?
Because remember, Fiona isn't selling a physical asset she currently possesses today. She is selling a promise to deliver an asset in the future.
Oh, right. The promise.
Both sides of this trade have massive future financial obligations. Steve, the long buyer, is obligated to buy the commodity later, no matter how far the price drops.
Even if it crashes to zero.
Even if it crashes. And Fiona, the short seller, is obligated to deliver the commodity later, no matter how high the price skyrockets. And frankly, a short position theoretically carries infinite risk if prices just surge upward forever.
So either one of them could face catastrophic losses and just default on the agreement.
Exactly.
So Broker Bob, the clearinghouse, steps into the middle of the room, looks at Steve, looks at Fiona, and says, "I don't trust either of you. You both have the potential to ruin me. Hand over a security deposit right now."
That's exactly what happens. And this is a great time to introduce the concept of novation because it really explains why Broker Bob is so paranoid.
Novation. Break that down for us.
When Steve buys and Fiona sells, they don't actually owe each other.
Wait, really?
Really. The clearinghouse steps directly in between them. Through novation, the clearinghouse becomes the buyer to every seller and the seller to every buyer.
So Bob is taking on the counterparty risk for the entire market.
Yes. If Steve completely blows up his account and goes bankrupt, Bob still owes Fiona her profits. Bob is putting the clearinghouse's actual capital on the line.
So Bob demands a security deposit from both sides because he is personally on the hook if either of them bails.
Yes, his survival depends on those deposits.
That makes total sense. All right, we need to solidify these differences because the exam writers, I mean, they love to bait candidates with stock market rules wrapped up inside a futures question.
Oh, it's their favorite trick.
So let's do a direct side-by-side cage match. Securities margin versus futures margin. Listener, pay attention. I'll call out the category. You give us the breakdown.
I'm ready.
Round one. Who sets the rules?
Okay. For securities margin, the initial requirements are governed by Regulation T, which is controlled strictly by the Federal Reserve Board.
Right.
The Fed uses it as a macroeconomic tool to control leverage. But for futures margin, the Federal Reserve has absolutely zero jurisdiction.
Zero.
None. The margin levels are set entirely by the individual exchanges and their respective clearinghouses.
Round two. Is a loan taking place?
In securities, yes. The broker is literally lending you a portion of the asset's purchase price. In futures, absolutely not. Nothing is being financed and nothing is being borrowed.
Round three. Are you paying interest?
Securities. Yes, you pay ongoing interest on the margin loan balance. Futures. No. Since there is no loan, there is no interest. It is simply your own capital sitting in an account, acting as a buffer.
Round four. Does ownership transfer?
Securities. Yes, you own the equity shares, even if they are held in street name by your broker. Futures. No ownership of any underlying physical asset is conveyed until actual physical delivery occurs, which is incredibly rare. Yeah. You just own an open contract.
Round five, the big one.
Mm-hmm.
Who actually posts the margin?
Securities. Only the buyer. Futures. Both the long and the short.
Boom. Okay, listener, this is where the test writers get really sneaky. Listen carefully to this exam trap. If you are staring at a multiple choice question about futures margin, and one of the answer choices says you are financing a portion of the contract.
Cross it out.
Or paying interest on the balance.
Cross it out.
Or that it's regulated by the Federal Reserve. You immediately cross it out. It is garbage. It's a trap specifically designed to catch people who skimmed the material and assumed all finance is just exactly the same.
It is honestly the most reliable way to eliminate incorrect answers on this exam. If the answer implies a loan in any way, it's wrong, period.
Okay, so if the Fed isn't pulling the strings and setting these levels to, like, control the economy, who is actually making the rules? Let's move into how Broker Bob operates.
Let's do it.
We know the clearinghouse sets the margin, but how do they decide the actual dollar amount? Do they just pick a number out of a hat?
Not at all. The exchanges determine both the initial and maintenance margin levels using highly sophisticated risk management algorithms, and they base it primarily on one critical factor.
Which is?
Market volatility. The clearinghouse needs to calculate the maximum probable amount the price of a commodity, let's stick with crude oil, is likely to swing during a single trading day.
So they are basically trying to predict the worst case daily scenario.
Exactly. If the global crude oil market is, you know, relatively stable and prices are barely moving day to day, the required performance bond might be relatively low.
Makes sense.
Let's say $3,000 per contract. That $3,000 covers the maximum anticipated daily price fluctuation, but
there's always a fact.
Let's say a major geopolitical conflict erupts in an oil-producing region, or a global pandemic shuts down supply chains. Suddenly, oil prices are swinging wildly $5, $6, $10 a barrel in a single day.
The risk of a trader getting completely wiped out and defaulting just skyrockets.
It goes through the roof. So the existing $3,000 buffer is no longer mathematically sufficient to protect the clearinghouse. So the exchange steps in immediately and says, due to extreme adverse price movements, the new initial margin requirement is now $5,000.
Okay, I want to clarify exactly how ruthless this is because the timing of these changes is a major testable point. Let's run a scenario with speculator Steve.
Okay.
3 weeks ago, the market was calm. Steve bought a crude oil contract, and he posted his required $3,000. He hasn't made a single new trade since. He's literally just sitting in his basement, in his gaming chair, drinking an energy drink, watching the charts.
Doing his thing.
Right. Can Broker Bob just wake up today, look at the breaking news on CNBC, raise the margin requirement to $5,000, and demand another $2,000 from Steve by this afternoon?
Yes. He absolutely can, and he will.
Wow.
And here is the kicker that you must remember for the test. Margin requirement revisions apply retroactively to existing, already open positions, not just to newly initiated trades.
That is brutal. So Steve's phone rings. It's broker Bob. Bob says, "Hey, Steve, the world's on fire today. I need another $2,000 wired into your account immediately." And Steve says, "But we had a deal. I put down my $3,000 weeks ago. I'm grandfathered in." What does Bob say?
Bob says, "There is no grandfathering in futures. The risk is present today, so your collateral must match today's risk. Wire the funds, or I liquidate your position at market price."
The clearinghouse takes absolutely no prisoners.
They can't afford to.
Yeah. And logically, I mean, they can't. They cannot have thousands of open contracts sitting out there with inadequate safety buffers just because the trades were placed a month ago.
Yeah.
Systemic risk doesn't care when you open your position.
Exactly.
So, listener, exam trap right here. If an answer choice suggests that a margin increase only applies to new positions going forward, it is blatantly false. Revisions hit open positions instantly.
Instantaneously.
And here's another related trap. The exam might throw some alphabet soup at you and claim the CFTC, the Commodity Futures Trading Commission, sets these specific dollar levels. True or false?
Emphatically false.
Good to know.
The CFTC is the federal regulatory body that oversees the broad legal framework and integrity of the futures markets, sure, but they do not dictate the specific dollar amounts for margin. That authority rests entirely with the individual exchanges and their clearinghouses.
Perfect. Now, before Steve or Fiona can even log in and make that first trade, they have to sign some serious paperwork.
Lots of paperwork.
Because broker Bob does not operate on handshakes. He demands absolute legal authority over your assets. What are the main documents they have to sign?
There are two main pieces of paperwork that are highly testable. First is the margin agreement, which is sometimes called the customer agreement.
Yeah, what does that do?
By signing this, the customer acknowledges all the rules we just discussed. They agree to maintain adequate margins, but most importantly, the customer legally grants the brokerage firm the right to liquidate their open positions if they fail to meet a margin call.
And what's the catch there?
They can do it without any prior notice.
Without prior notice. Notice the phrasing there, listener. Bob doesn't have to send you a polite letter and wait for a check to clear in the mail. If your account drops below the threshold, he hits the sell button and closes you out instantly.
And to make that execution even more seamless, the customer must also sign the transfer of funds agreement.
Ah, also known as the cross-margining agreement. How does this one work?
This document authorizes the brokerage firm to automatically sweep money between a customer's different accounts.
Give me an example.
Let's say Steve has a regulated commodities account where he trades his oil futures, and he has a completely separate securities account where he holds tech stocks or just cash.
Okay.
If Steve gets hit with a massive futures margin call, broker Bob doesn't have to sit around and wait for Steve to initiate a wire transfer from his bank. Bob has the legal authority to reach directly into Steve's securities account, pull the necessary cash, and transfer it into the futures account to cover the deficit.
So Bob essentially has the master keys to every vault you own and the legal right to seize assets to protect the clearinghouse.
Pretty much.
Yeah. It eliminates the entire collections lag that normally exists in the real world. That is incredibly powerful risk management.
It's how the system survives.
All right, so we know what the deposit is. We know why Bob demands it. And we know he can change the rules whenever volatility spikes. Now, let's get into the actual math. Segmenting into the day-to-day mechanics, I call this the fill-the-tank rule.
I love this analogy. But to understand the math, we first need to clearly define two terms that candidates conflate all the time on the exam.
Hit me.
Initial margin and maintenance margin.
Okay, let's break these down. Initial margin is the cover charge to get into the club. It's the amount of capital you must have in your account to initiate a brand new position.
Right.
If you want to buy one oil contract and the initial margin is $5,000, you hand over $5,000. Straightforward. But then there is maintenance margin. What is the functional purpose of this second number?
Maintenance margin is the absolute minimum equity floor you are allowed to hit while the position remains open. It is a safety buffer, and it is always set somewhat lower than the initial margin requirement.
You get some numbers.
Let's say in our scenario, initial is $5,000 and maintenance is set at $4,000.
Okay, I have a visual for this. Listener, picture the dashboard of your car, specifically the fuel gauge. Your gas tank holds exactly $5,000 worth of gas.
That's your initial margin.
Exactly. It means the tank is 100% full. Now look partway down the fuel gauge. Imagine there is a thick, bright red painted line at the $4,000 mark.
That red line is your maintenance margin.
Yes. Now, let's watch Speculator Steve drive this car over a 3-day period.
This is a perfect way to visualize the daily mark-to-market process. Let's see how Steve does.
Monday morning, Steve buys his contract. His tank is full at $5,000. Over the course of Monday, the market moves slightly against him. He's making bad predictions. His gas is burning. By the close of business, his equity drops to $4,500. What happens?
Nothing happens.
Nothing.
He is between the initial level of 5,000 and the maintenance floor of 4,000. He has suffered an adverse price movement, sure, but he is within the acceptable safety buffer. No action is required.
Okay. Tuesday. The market keeps dropping. Steve's equity drains down to $4,001. He's literally one single dollar above the thick red painted line. Is he fine?
He is undoubtedly sweating profusely in that gaming chair, but legally, yes. He hasn't breached the maintenance level. Broker Bob stays away. The account is still considered properly margined.
Wow. Okay, Wednesday. Disaster strikes. The crude oil market just absolutely tanks on a bad inventory report. Steve's equity drops rapidly to $3,700. Alarms go off inside the car. He has crossed the red painted line.
He breached the $4,000 maintenance floor.
Broker Bob kicks down Steve's door. It is margin call time. Now, listener, this is where you must pay attention. Direct question for you. This is the single most tested calculation dynamic on the entire exam.
It absolutely is. Pay close attention.
Steve's tank is currently sitting at $3,700.
Yeah.
The red maintenance line is at $4,000. A full initial tank is $5,000. How much cash does Steve have to deposit to satisfy Broker Bob's margin call?
Pause and think.
Are you bringing it back to the red line or are you bringing it back to full? Give yourself a second.
Do you have it? Steve must fill the tank all the way back up to the $5,000 initial requirement.
All the way to full?
Yes. He currently has $3,700 in the account. Therefore, he owes Broker Bob a deposit of exactly $1,300.
He cannot just splash in $300 to get his nose barely back above the $4,000 red line.
Yeah.
He has to go all the way back to full. And this trips up so many people because they default back to securities rules.
Exactly. In the stock market, under a Reg T maintenance call, you only have to restore your equity back to the maintenance level itself. But futures margin is far more strict. A margin call in futures requires recapitalization all the way back to the initial requirement.
I am going to say a phrase right now, and listener, I want you to mentally tattoo it on your arm for test day. Ready?
Say it.
Maintenance is the trigger. Initial is the destination. Let's say it again. Maintenance is the trigger. Initial is the destination. You cross the trigger, you get sent all the way back to the destination.
It's the perfect way to remember it. And if you stop and think about the systemic risk we discussed earlier, it makes perfect sense why the clearinghouse enforces this rule.
Why is that?
If a retail trader like Steve is on a severe losing streak and his equity is dropping fast, Broker Bob does not want him hovering right at the precipice of default, just $1 above the maintenance line.
Because he could blow past zero the very next day.
Exactly. That is incredibly dangerous for the clearinghouse. By forcing Steve to recapitalize all the way back up to initial margin, Broker Bob restores the complete original safety buffer. It resets the risk profile.
It's ruthless, but honestly, it's brilliant.
Okay.
Now, we just described Steve losing money over a few days and his gas tank dropping. But let's transition from analogies to the actual financial mechanics. Because this isn't just a paper loss sitting on a screen. Broker Bob is literally ripping cash out of accounts every single day in a process called mark-to-market.
Yes. Mark-to-market. This is the engine of the futures market. This is what prevents the buildup of massive hidden debts that caused, you know, the 2008 financial crisis in the OTC derivatives market.
So how does it work in regulated futures?
Every single business day, at the close of trading, the exchange calculates an official settlement price. Every single open position in the entire market is repriced or marked to market based on that settlement price.
It is a daily mandatory true-up, a daily shakedown.
Exactly. The unrealized gains and losses are converted into actual physical cash obligations every single afternoon.
And this creates variation margin.
Right. Variation margin is the actual physical cash that flows between accounts to settle daily changes in contract value. Losers must pay variation margin into the clearinghouse, and winners receive variation margin from the clearinghouse.
Okay, let's visualize this on the trading floor. The closing bell rings at 4:00 p.m. Broker Bob walks out onto the floor with a ledger. He goes over to speculator Steve, who bet entirely wrong on crude oil today.
Poor Steve.
Bob reaches directly into Steve's pocket, pulls out $800 in cash, that is the variation margin, and then walks directly across the room to Farmer Fiona, who bet right today, and stuffs that exact same $800 right into her pocket. The cash literally leaves Steve's account and enters Fiona's account today.
And tomorrow afternoon, they will do the exact same thing based on tomorrow's closing price. This is why a substantial adverse price movement can trigger a margin call incredibly fast.
Because you aren't waiting.
Right. In the futures market, you are not waiting until the contract expires in 6 months to settle your debts. You are settling your debts today.
So if the market crashes on Tuesday afternoon, Steve's account equity is physically drained on Tuesday evening. If that cash drain pushes him below the maintenance red line, the margin call is issued Wednesday morning.
And he doesn't have a week to mail a check. He has to wire funds immediately.
Or else we default back to the margin agreement and Bob liquidates him.
Yep. And keep in mind, immediate intraday margin calls are also a reality during extreme volatility, where Bob won't even wait for the afternoon closing bell. He'll demand cash at noon.
Just a brutal high-speed environment. Okay, take a breath. Pattern interrupt. We have spent the last 20 minutes talking about Steve suffering, losing money, and getting shaken down by broker Bob. Let's switch the energy completely. What if, and I know based on his trading setup, this is a massive stretch, but what if speculator Steve actually gets a prediction right?
It could happen.
What if he wins up?
That brings us to the mechanics of excess equity and the withdrawal floor, because winning also has specific rules.
Okay, let's run the scenario. Steve buys a contract. The initial margin is $5,000. Maintenance is $4,000. The market actually goes his way.
Good for him.
At the daily mark-to-market shakedown, broker Bob reaches into a losing trader's pocket, pulls out $2,000, and hands it to Steve. Steve's account equity jumps from $5,000 to $7,000.
So Steve now has account equity that is pushed significantly above the initial requirement. That extra $2,000, the amount sitting above the $5,000 initial mark, is officially classified as excess equity.
Excess equity. Got it. So Steve looks at his account balance and his eyes light up. He wants to buy a massive new curved gaming monitor. What are his options with that excess cash?
The rules are quite flexible when you are properly capitalized. The trader can use that excess equity to fund the initial margin requirements for opening brand new futures positions, or, and this is what Steve wants to do, they can simply withdraw it from the account as hard cash.
But wait, listener, here is another massive exam trap regarding withdrawals. Broker Bob isn't going to let Steve drain the account dry just because he had one good day. There is withdrawal floor.
Yes, there is.
So test your logic. Steve's tank is overfilled to $7,000. Initial is $5,000. Maintenance is $4,000. How much cash can Steve legally siphon out of his account?
Think about it.
Can he withdraw $3,000, bringing his balance down to the $4,000 maintenance line, since he doesn't get a margin call until he breaches it anyway?
Pause. Think about Bob's paranoia.
What's the answer?
The answer is absolutely no. He cannot withdraw down to maintenance. He can only withdraw down to the initial requirement.
Okay.
He must leave a minimum of $5,000 in the account to support the open position. His excess equity is exactly $2,000. Therefore, the maximum he can withdraw is $2,000.
See, this is so easy to confuse when you are staring at a multiple choice question under a time limit. The exam will try to mix up the margin call trigger with the withdrawal floor.
It helps to view the mechanics as a one-way ratchet.
A ratchet? How so?
Well, you can drift down to the maintenance level involuntarily by losing money in the market, but you can only withdraw money down to the initial level by choice.
And I am going to repeat that because it is a brilliant distillation of the rule. You can drift down to maintenance by losing. You can only withdraw down to initial by choice. Broker Bob says, listen, Steve, if the market beats you up, I will give you a little grace. I'll give you a buffer down to $4,000. Before I scream at you for more money. But if you are voluntarily pulling cash out of my vault to buy a new computer monitor, you better leave my full $5,000 initial deposit untouched.
Exactly. The clearinghouse demands that if you are taking capital out of the system, you leave your open positions fully 100% capitalized.
Okay, we are flying through this. You guys are doing great. Now let's shift gears. Everything we have discussed so far assumes you are a high-risk trader, like speculator Steve, paying full price at the door, $5,000 initial. But broker Bob actually operates a VIP list.
Oh, the VIPs.
There are specific types of market participants who get a massive discount on their margin requirements. They pay significantly less to open the exact same contract. Why on earth would broker Bob, the most paranoid man in the global financial system, demand less money from someone?
Because they bring mathematically less risk to the exchange. If there is one core principle of the clearinghouse that you must internalize for these alternative calculations, it is this. Offset reduces risk.
Offset reduces risk.
And reduced risk reduces the required performance bond.
Let's unpack that. Offset reduces risk. Let's look at VIP member number one, Farmer Fiona. She is granted what is called hedge margin. Explain what makes Fiona so special to the clearinghouse.
Farmer Fiona qualifies as what the exam strictly defines as a bona fide hedger. To earn that classification, you must hold a substantially offsetting position in the physical or cash market.
When you say cash market, you mean the real world. Main Street, not Wall Street.
Exactly. Let's visualize Fiona's specific situation. She operates a farm. She currently has 100,000 bushels of real physical corn growing in her fields.
That's a lot of corn.
It is. And that crop represents a massive unhedged financial exposure. If the global price of corn collapses right before her harvest in October, she could lose her farm and go completely bankrupt. So to protect herself, she logs into her brokerage account and she short sells corn futures contracts equal to 100,000 bushels. She locks in her selling price today.
Okay, let's pause and map the risk profile here. If the price of corn completely plummets, her real-life physical crop loses a ton of value. It's a disaster on the physical farm. But UT, she is holding a short position in the futures market.
And what happens when you're short?
When you are short, you make money when the price goes down. So while her physical crop loses value, her short futures position gains massive offsetting value.
Exactly. The financial loss in the physical cash market is roughly canceled out by the financial gain in the futures market. They offset.
Yeah.
Now, it's never a mathematically perfect one-to-one offset due to minor local price variations, a concept called basis risk. But her net exposure to a catastrophic price collapse is effectively zero.
Because Fiona has a massive mountain of real corn backing up her trades, she is basically wearing a heavy-duty life jacket.
She's safe.
Speculator Steve. He is swimming completely naked in the middle of the ocean. If Steve short sells corn and the price randomly skyrockets due to a drought, he just loses everything. His losses are theoretically infinite. He has no physical corn in his basement to sell at the new higher price to offset his futures losses.
And none at all.
So, Broker Bob looks out of the water, sees Steve drowning, but sees Fiona calmly floating in her bright orange life jacket. Bob says, "You know what, Fiona? You are fundamentally low risk. I'm going to charge you a significantly lower hedge margin requirement."
And that dynamic is highly testable. The exam trap here is straightforward but very effective.
What is it?
If a multiple choice option ever suggests that a bona fide hedger posts the same margin as a speculator, or more margin than a speculator, it is instantly wrong. A hedger posts less margin on the exact same futures contract because their offsetting physical cash market position lowers the net risk to the clearinghouse.
It is pure logic. Lower systemic risk equals a lower security deposit. Okay, what about VIP member number two, Spreader Sam? He pays what is called spread margin. Now, so Sam is not a farmer. He doesn't have physical crops in the real world. Technically, he is a speculator, but he plays a very specific, highly insulated game.
Right. Sam trades spreads. A spread involves holding an offsetting long futures position and short futures position simultaneously within the same account.
Example time.
A classic example is an intra-market spread, like being long July wheat and short September wheat.
Okay, let's run a vivid scenario for Sam to see why he gets a discount. Sam is long July wheat and he is short September wheat. Let's say overnight a massive global weather event occurs. A historic continent-wide drought is announced. All wheat prices everywhere skyrocket instantly. Limit up. Pandemonium on the trading floor. What happens to Sam's account?
Let's look at the legs of his trade. His long leg, the July wheat, makes an absolute fortune. Prices surge and longs profit when prices rise. It goes through the roof.
Great for Sam.
But look at his short leg, the September wheat. He loses a fortune on that side because shorts lose money when prices rise. Because both the July and September wheat contracts are reacting to the exact same global drought, the prices of the two legs move largely in tandem.
So they basically cancel each other out.
They do. A broad, market-wide, macroeconomic price swing lifts or drops both sides roughly equally. While Steve is either making millions or going bankrupt on a directional move, Sam barely feels the massive market boomer crash.
He's insulated.
Very. What Sam is actually exposed to, what he is really attempting to trade, is just the fractional change in the price relationship between July and September.
He's betting on a gap.
Yeah.
He's an arbitrager. Let me give you another analogy, listener. Imagine a massive high-rise elevator. Speculator Steve is betting his life savings on whether the elevator car is going to shoot up to the penthouse or plummet down to the lobby. It's a massive, terrifying directional move.
Terrifying is the right word.
Right. But Spreader Sam. Sam is standing inside the elevator car. He isn't betting on the elevator going up or down the shaft. He is just betting on the tiny distance between the floor and the ceiling inside the car. Even if the entire elevator plummets 30 stories, the distance between the floor and the ceiling inside barely changes. It's a tiny, tiny move compared to a naked directional bet.
That is a brilliant way to picture it. The net risk in a spread position is a mere fraction of the risk in an outright naked directional position. And because the mathematical risk of default is so much smaller, Broker Bob gives Sam a massive discount.
Spread margin.
Yes. Spread margin is significantly lower than the total margin that would be required for two separate outright positions.
Boom. Here's where the test writers try to get you. Listener, if the exam gives you a mathematical scenario with a spread, and an answer choice implies it costs the same as two separate bets, for example, if it says the initial margin for long July is 3,000, the initial margin for short September is 3,000, therefore the required spread margin is 6,000. That is a blatant trap.
A total trap.
It will be much, much lower. Spread margin is lower. Hedge margin is lower. Why? Say it with me, listener. Offset reduces risk, and reduced risk reduces the required performance bond.
If you can internalize that single phrase, offset reduces risk, it will guide you safely through at least half of the conceptual margin questions in this entire unit.
All right, we have survived the gauntlet. We have successfully dismantled the stock market loan myth. We've suffered through the brutal daily mark-to-market shakedowns with Speculator Steve, and we've gotten VIP discounts at the door with Fiona and Sam. It is time for the rapid-fire recap.
Let's bring it home.
These are the absolute non-negotiable takeaways you need to have locked in your brain for exam day. I'm going to throw out the concept and I want you to expand on it so we know exactly how it might look on the test. Ready?
I'm ready. Let's lock this in.
Number one, define the true nature of futures margin.
It is a performance bond, a good faith security deposit to guarantee you will fulfill your contract obligations. It is not a partial payment toward an asset. It is not a loan from your broker, and it has absolutely nothing to do with Regulation T or the Federal Reserve. No borrowing, no interest, no ownership.
Number two, who is forced to post this margin?
Both the long buyer and the short seller. Because both sides have significant future financial obligations that they could theoretically default on, the clearinghouse demands a security deposit from both parties to mitigate counterparty risk.
Number three, who actually has the authority to set and revise these margin levels, and who does it impact?
The individual exchanges and their clearinghouses set the levels based on market volatility, not the CFTC. Mm-hmm. And most importantly, if they raise the requirements due to wild price swings, those increases apply retroactively to existing open positions, not just to new trades.
Number four, the biggest calculation trap. What happens when your account equity falls below the maintenance margin level?
You receive a margin call and you must deposit enough cash to restore your equity all the way back to the initial margin requirement. Maintenance is simply the trigger that alerts the clearinghouse. Initial is the destination you must recapitalize to. You must fill the tank entirely back to full.
Number five, how do hedgers and spreaders fit into this framework?
Hedgers and spreaders pay significantly L-smart margin than outright speculators. This is because they hold offsetting positions either in the physical cash market or in another futures delivery month, which dramatically reduces their net risk of default. And less risk to the clearinghouse equals a smaller required performance bond.
Incredible. If you know the mechanics behind those five principles backward and forward, you aren't just going to pass this section of the Series 3. You are going to absolutely crush it. But before we sign off, I want to leave you with something to chew on.
What's that?
We've spent this entire deep dive talking about Broker Bob shaking retail traders down every day to keep the system safe. We've talked about how ruthless the clearinghouse is with intraday liquidations.
It is an incredibly robust, deeply paranoid system. But, you know, if we step back for a moment and think about the sheer logistical scale of that daily mark-to-market process, every single business day, billions of dollars are vaporized from losing accounts and materialized in winning accounts across the globe.
Right.
It works beautifully when the losers actually have the cash in their accounts to cover their deficits. But think about extreme, once-in-a-generation black swan events. What happens during a historic market crash when the losers literally do not have the cash to wire when Broker Bob comes knocking at 4:00 p.m.?
Yeah. What if Steve's bank account is just empty?
What happens if multiple massive institutional trading firms default simultaneously and the cross-margining sweeps come up empty?
Who pays Fiona if Steve's account is at zero and he declares bankruptcy?
Exactly. Understanding how the clearinghouse handles that catastrophic cascading failure, how they deploy their massive guarantee funds, and how they ultimately socialize that apocalyptic risk among the surviving clearing members. That is your next step in mastering true market mechanics.
Chilling stuff. Broker Bob has contingency plans for his contingency plans, and his vault goes very, very deep. But for today, you know exactly how to handle his margin calls. Remember where we started? That murky, confusing world of memorizing dry textbook definitions? It's gone. You can see the x-ray of the market now. You know exactly what a performance bond is. You know why the clearinghouse demands it. And you know how to outsmart speculator Steve. You've got this. Good luck on the exam.